The stocks discussed on PTS Radio are not in any way a solicitation or recommendation to buy, sell, or hold. If considering acting on information presented, we recommend that you seek out a licensed professional for advice. Get ready for the radio show that is all about trading. It's your weekly dose about how to trade your account. Here is your host, Mel Raymond.
Welcome to PTS Radio, the broadcast that is all about trading. This is your host, Mel Raymond, and we certainly have a lot to discuss today. This past Monday and Tuesday, as many of you know, we had a PTS course with traders from throughout the United States, from Europe, and from Thailand. It was a true pleasure to work with these people. They were a sharp group. I had lots of impressions from the course. Interestingly, somebody had a laptop from tradingcomputers.com. It was just a beauty. In fact, it was so nice, I called Friday and placed an order myself. I think we're going to make that our official laptop for use at the courses. We use a laptop all the time to pull in the market data and to run PowerPoints. Lots of interesting things happened at the course. I can remember on the second day, we had taken a 10-minute break, and I was coming back in the amphitheater, and I noticed that SPG was giving short signals. I had my little wireless microphone, so I said, if anybody has a laptop, go ahead and short it. Well, somebody did. About 5 minutes later, and we were all watching the charts on the rearview projection system, and I said, it's down at the mean. Watch your short chart. It may not make it. A few seconds later, I said, it's not going to make it. If you're in it, go ahead and get out. One of the traders said, all right, I'm out. I said, what did you make? He said, I made $200 in less than 5 minutes. And then, of course, it was running back up again. Gave the same signal. He took the same trade again. And probably within under 10 minutes had $400. That was a great example of how you can scalp. And what makes it even more interesting is he was doing it with options. Of course, with PTS, which is extremely accurate, you can scalp and day trade options. We always start every broadcast by looking at the PTS setups for the previous week and the complementary setups. If you're new to PTS, the PTS setups are completely independent of the PTS course. Many of our graduates do their own setups and trade all sorts of things, futures, forex, options, and stocks. The setups are strictly options and stocks. This past week, we had really good quality trades. I was pleased. RKH was the best with $7.88. And then we had a whole string of very good trades. 665, 627, 407, that sort of thing. Good quality trades. They made good moves. The comp setups were decent. Apollo gave us two shorts, one for 202 and one for 362. These were from the short trigger, and SPG along, which gave us $3.34. At the end of this broadcast, we will go over two complimentary setups that we're giving you for the coming week. Now, this past Monday night, we did not update the PTS setups. Normally, they're updated every single night, and if necessary, new trades are added. We didn't do that on Monday night because we were away at the course, but we still managed to pull in close to 20 decent trades. Let's take a look now at the markets. The first chart we're going to look at would be SPX, and we have on the PTS radio page a chart for you showing the current state of SPX as of Friday afternoon. If you have PTS charting, go ahead and put up SPX. If you don't, you can look at the PTS radio page, and you'll see the same information presented to you in candles. Those of you with PTS, notice the week, first of all. Where is it? Almost at the second standard deviation. Now look over at your day, and you'll see the 200-day moving average is coming up at 954. We're very, very close. That's a point you have to pay attention to. Now, here's some new information. I got it from two sides today. We have begun using a 10-month moving average. Now, where would you find that? Well, on the monthly chart. Now, I keep my monthly chart off the platform. It's on a separate monitor, along with all sorts of odds and ends. But this is important when you're doing long-term evaluation. You will notice that almost everything you look at has now moved up to that 10-month moving average. This 10-month moving average is something many professionals and economists use, and they feel that once it gets to this area, it's due for a reversal. I don't know if this is correct, but I know that the weekly chart, especially if you look at an RSI, are extremely overbought, although that's not necessarily reflected in the shorter charts. They seem to be set to move up in perpetuity. You know that's not going to happen. I think it's very, very likely that we will have a sharp correction very, very soon. Somebody asked me on the phone, I believe Friday, which day this coming week that will occur. I said Wednesday. They said, are you sure? Well, I said, I'm not really sure. My cat just gave me that information. That's one of the inside jokes around here, that the setups are done by a cat named Shadow. He's a sharp cat, and when possible, I let him join me in the office. He loves to just sit on my lap or sit on the floor and watch the charts. Now, often I look at Larry McMillan on weekends. He's a market analyst, and he says our indicators continue to remain bullish, although some are seriously overbought. And that's what I'm saying. The broad market rally seems to show little sign of slowing down. I disagree, because on PTS, it shows that in many cases, some of these charts are just stumbling to climb higher. I think we're going to run out of buyers soon. He did mention that the SPX broke out over resistance at the 875 to 880 level. Again, you can see this on the charts I gave you. Having accomplished that, the next areas of resistance are the January highs at 940, then the highs of last October at 1000. SPX has reached the 930 level before falling back sharply in an overbought correction. So, for now, the 930-940 area represents overhead resistance. On the downside, the 875-880 area should now represent support, as does the 20-day moving average, currently near 870. Market breadth has been extremely strong and is overbought. Yes, to some extent, but folks, you'll notice that not all stocks have made the big move. Some of them have made much smaller moves. Interestingly, the best stocks have made the smallest moves, and some of the junk stocks are floating way up where they don't belong. And it suspiciously looks to me as if they're being set up for a crash. Larry mentions the volatility index VIX remains in a downtrend. That too is bullish for the broad market. VIX would have to climb above 37 to jeopardize the current downtrend. So do keep an eye every day on the VIX. The lower it goes, the less fear and volatility there is in the markets, and the more the markets will tend to move up. And Larry says, finally, in summary, the situation remains bullish. The overbought nature of breadth and the put-call ratios indicate that sharp but short-lived corrections are possible, but the intermediate-term trend is still upward. I agree with that. I think we're going to have a strong pullback, but then a return to longs, and that sometime in late June or sometime in July, I think we're going to have another correction, and this time, I don't think it's going to bounce. I think it's just going to keep right on going down. Now, that is really a micro view of the market. How about a macro view of the economy? What might be happening? What's really driving all this? Well, as usual, a lot of misinformation is being disseminated to the public. I saw in the New York Times that unemployment is somewhere around 8.9%. Are you kidding? The government says it's somewhere around 15 on U6, and if you run the old formulas without all the baloney, it's somewhere up around 24-25%. That's right. 24-25% of the population is now out of work or has some kind of part-time work, where their employment ran out and they're not being counted anymore. But I run into so many people looking for jobs. And that jobs report, you might recall Friday that they were saying, oh, it's slowing down the speed of job loss, and there are a whole bunch of new jobs being created. So I looked into it. A lot of those are government jobs, and a lot of those are taking the census. Those are not the kinds of permanent jobs that are going to turn anything around. I just read another article that said, stop trying to stimulate the old economy. That's what got us into trouble in the first place. We're doing the wrong thing. The more we do of what we're doing right now, the worse the situation is going to become. But let's take a look at an article that was sent to me by two different people. They thought it was so good, I ought to use it on the broadcast. I want to thank you, Mike and Rick, both for sending this. It's very, very interesting. This comes from a trader source called Seeking Alpha. If you haven't played around with Seeking Alpha, you might really enjoy it. There are articles about the market on virtually anything. The site is free. Free is good. And I'll try to make this fast and summarize it, but since the economy began sliding downhill in late 2007, mainstream economic and market experts have consistently erred on the sunny side. As late as last June, the consensus was the U.S. was heading for a soft landing and would avoid recession. Now, I'm interjecting, we had already been in recession for a year or two. We're now in depression. Several months later, the slump was acknowledged to have started in January 2008, but we were supposed to see renewed growth by mid-2009, with unemployment peaking in the 8 to 9% range. A quick, shovel-ready stimulus bag was supposed to set us back on the road to prosperity. And so it goes, explaining what was going on. In the interest of providing you with an alternate vision, something outside the mainstream, we have 10 predictions for America through the year 2012. That's only 2.5 years from now. This is not boilerplate doomsaying. Rather, I am laying out in highly specific terms what will happen over the next 3-odd years. Others have thrown around the term depression, but I'm going to tell you precisely what it means for you, your investments, and your community. When these predictions come true, I expect to be rewarded with a 7-figure consulting gig. Now, I didn't write this. This is Jake, who wrote this for Seeking Alpha. He also wants a book contract or a high-level position in whatever administration succeeds the doomed Obama team. That is, if anyone succeeds it at all. Prediction 1. The 25-year equities bubble pops in 2009. U.S. and foreign equities markets will stop treading water and realign with economic reality. Stock prices will cease to reflect the greater fool mentality and will return to being a function of dividend yields, which, by the way, have been miserable. The S&P will sink below 500. In a bid to stem the panic, the government will enforce periodic stock market holidays and will vastly expand the scope of its short-selling prohibitions, eventually banning short-selling altogether. And as we all know as traders, it's the short-sellers that brought this whole calamity upon us. Oh, I'm just kidding. Prediction 2. With public pension systems and tens of millions of 401k holders virtually wiped out, and with the baby boomers retiring en masse, there will be tremendous pressure on the government to get into the stock market in order to bid up prices. Therefore, sometime in 2010, the Federal Reserve will create and loan out hundreds of billions of fresh dollars to the usual well-connected suspects, instructing them to buy up stocks on the public's behalf. This scheme will have a fancy but meaningless name, something like Taxpayer Assurance Equities Facility. It will have no effect other than to serve as a buyer of last resort for capitulating smart money types who want to get out of stocks entirely. Prediction 3. Millions of new retirees, including white-collar people with high expectations for a golden retirement, will be left virtually penniless. Folks, I already know that situation from many, many people. Thousands will starve or freeze to death in their own homes. Hundreds of thousands will find themselves evicted and homeless, or will have to move in with their less than enthusiastic children, already strained by the rising tide of working-age unemployed. State and local welfare services will be overwhelmed, and by 2012 will have largely collapsed. I can see some of that going on around the country now. I can see lots of publicly funded services that we took for granted now gone. Many communities, for example, have already closed their libraries. Prediction 4. Quantitative easing will fail to restart previous patterns of lending and consumption as the government sends out additional rebate checks and takes ever more drastic measures to force banks to lend. Hyperinflation could take hold. However, comprehensive debt relief via a devaluation of the dollar is even more likely. That's what I really think is going to happen. If we do that, the Chinese and other foreign holders of our bonds would be screaming mad but unable to do anything. Every country that has not found a way out of dollar denominated reserve assets by 2012 will see its reserves eliminated. Prediction 5, the government will stop pretending that it can finance continuous multi-trillion dollar deficits on the private market. By late 2010, the sole buyers of new U.S. Treasury and agency bonds will be the Federal Reserve and a few derelict financial institutions under government control. This may lead to hyperinflation. Prediction 6. As the need for financial industry paper pushers declines and people have less money to spend on lawyers and Starbucks, unemployment will rise until the private sector has eliminated all of its excess capacity and superfluous or socially needless jobs. The government's narrow unemployment figure, U3, will rise into the high teens by 2010. The government's broader unemployment figure, U6, will cease to be reported when it reaches 25%. It will simply be too big and embarrassing. Ultimately, 1 in 3 eligible Americans will be unemployed, underemployed, or never employed. For example, college grads permanently unable to find suitable work. Interesting, I was watching the news today. I'm in Atlanta. There's a small liberal arts college that's graduating 300 students. So far, 19 have found jobs. The rest are looking for summer work. Wonderful, because the school charges something like $40,000 a year tuition. Next prediction, 7. With their pension dreams squashed and their salaries frozen or cut, police and other local government workers will turn to wholesale corruption in order to survive. America's ideal of honest, courteous, and impartial cops, teachers, and small-time local functionaries will have come to an end. Prediction 8. Commercial overcapacity will strike with a vengeance. By 2012, thousands of enclosed malls, strip malls, unfinished residential developments, motels, truck stops, distribution centers, middle-of-nowhere resorts and casinos, and small city airports across America will turn into dilapidated, unwanted, and dangerous ghost towns. With no economic incentive for their maintenance or repair, they will crumble into overgrown plywood and sheetrock ruins. Prediction 9, by the end of 2010, tens of millions of households will have fallen behind on their mortgage or stopped paying altogether. Many banks will be unable to process the massive volume of foreclosure paperwork, much less actually seize and resell the homes. Devaluation, as mentioned in Prediction 4, could ease the situation for those mortgage holders still afloat, but it would also eliminate any incentive for most banks to stay in the mortgage business. In any case, the housing market in many parts of the country will lock up completely, nothing bought or sold. With virtually no loans being made, even the government will finally acknowledge that most banks are fundamentally insolvent. A general bank run will only be averted through a roughly $1 trillion recapitulation of the FDIC, courtesy of new money from the Federal Reserve. Prediction 10, and final prediction, as the economy is never independent of the society within which it functions, the next few paragraphs will focus on social and political factors, which will have as much impact on market and consumer confidence as any developments in the financial sector. And they talk about how Obama will be blamed for much of this crisis, so he'll be a one-term president. It mentions militias and armed sex will be more prominent than in the early 1990s. Standoff dramas, violent score settlings, and going out with a bang attacks by laid-off workers and bankrupted investors, already a national plague, will become an everyday occurrence. For economic and social reasons, millions of immigrants and guest workers will return to their home countries, taking their assets and skills with them. The flow of skilled immigrants will slow to a trickle. Birth rates will plummet as families struggle with uncertainty and reduced or no income. Property crime, this is interesting, will explode as citizens bitter over their shattered dreams attempt to comfort themselves by taking what is not theirs. This is something, by the way, anybody who lives near a city needs to consider, and I mean now. Mutinies and desertions will proliferate in an increasingly demoralized, overstretched military, especially when states can no longer provide the educational and other benefits promised to their National Guard troops. there will be widespread tax collection issues and a huge backlash against the Fed, federal and state bureaucrats who demand 3% salary pay raises while the private sector wages remain frozen or worse. In short, the Tea Parties of tomorrow will likely not be so restrained, and finally, between now and 2012, we are likely to see another earth-shaking national embarrassment on the scale of 9/11 attacks or Hurricane Katrina and its aftermath. This will demonstrate conclusively to all Americans that their government, even under a savior figure like Obama, cannot in fact save them. By 2012, there will be a general feeling that the nation is in imminent danger of blowing up or coming apart at the seams. This fear will be justified, given that the U.S. has always been held together by the promise of a continuously rising material standard of living, the famous pursuit of happiness, rather than any ethnic or religious ties. If that goes, so could everything else. We were lucky in the 1930s. We may not be so lucky again. Now, this is a worst-case scenario, but it's one that I and many of my friends have been talking about for the last 3, 4, or 5 years. It's very, very likely, unless something happens to stop it, and instead of anything happening to stop it, the new government is actually exacerbating the situation. I have no doubt that the next year or two will be very, very interesting in the U.S. And now, let's move on. We're here with Mike Mizunas, PTS coach. What sorts of interesting things do you bring our traders today, Mike?
I've been listening and reading quite a bit about what these brains in the market have come up with, and I read something this morning that said stock prices eventually will cease to reflect the greater fool mentality. The greater fool theory, or GFT, states someone who makes a questionable investment will usually be able to sell it later to a bigger fool. That pretty much sums it up, doesn't it?
Yeah, I kind of think they're setting up some of these stocks, especially the ones with very poor fundamentals that have been run way out of sight. Interestingly, a lot of the best stocks have not been run up.
Yeah, I think so many of these right now, people are afraid to miss the run-up. Fortunately, I'm afraid when the music stops playing, they're going to be wondering what happened to them. I looked at some interesting information on options trading today, which might help a few of the traders. If you would normally take a 500-share position in a stock, then you should only buy about 5 options contracts. Some investors get carried away with options and end up owning 50 or 100 contracts because of the leverage and the lower initial investment, but they don't realize the investment can go to zero. Options will protect you to a certain extent. You can only lose the amount of the option, but just the same, especially when you're a new trader, if you're used to trading 500 shares or something like that, stay with the same option setup. One contract equals 100 shares. Don't get carried away.
Right, it's a double-edged sword. It's just the same money management skills you use with stocks, you just transfer over to options.
That's correct. The other thing that I wanted to mention is you have to look at the price of the options. Don't overpay for options. You have to be cautious when volatility levels in the market spike. Options prices rise during the times when volatility spikes, and then it often retreats as investors become more confident. If you get into an option premium, and let's just say the premium is $5 and the volatility is up around 90, if the volatility drops back, all of a sudden your premium cost is going to drop back and you're going to be holding a losing trade. So you have to be really careful.
And what would you measure that with? Which of the Greeks do you measure that with?
Well, it's just volatility. You look at the volatility and you look at the delta. The volatility is actually on your options chain, and the options chain will give you what the volatility figures are. You'll notice from one day to the next, if the stock price starts rising, if your volatility starts to rise, you don't want to get like a stock. You don't want to get in at the top. When the volatility is run all the way up to the top, the only place it can usually go is down. A small decline in the volatility will drive the premium price lower, even though the underlying stock might have barely moved. You have to really monitor the CBOE, Chicago Board of Options Exchange, the volatility index, also known as the VIX.
You can also, the VIX, of course, being excellent, you can also have applied volatility as part of your options chain.
That's true. keep a chart up of the VIX. If for NASDAQ traders, if they're trading the NASDAQ, they also might want to watch the NASDAQ Volatility Index, which is the VXN. The higher the volatility number gets, the greater the fear, and consequently, the higher the options premium becomes.
Absolutely. That's a good point. People don't always think about those. Pricing options is an art sometimes.
Yes, it is. There are good options available. There are good options prices available, premiums available. But when you don't find one, for goodness sake, move on. Go to something else. Either trade the stock or look for another stock or another equity to trade with an option. If the option is terrible, basically they know where the stock is headed, and you're not going to get it for a reasonable price.
Sometimes they tell you they don't want you around by just increasing the spread to something that's totally irrational.
Hopefully some traders haven't learned that yet, but hopefully they will.
Yeah, I take the hint when I see a dollar or two or $3 spread. I know they're telling me to go away.
Yeah, they're telling you to go away, or else they're telling you, please come in. We're happy to take your money.
Anything else that you'd want to cover today, Mike?
Well, I think what the market needs right now is to get a sizable retracement. I think that's the best thing that could possibly happen here. And traders really need to watch the direction of their longer term. Don't fight the trend. Monitor your trade. Retracements are a reality in this market, and you just have to be aware of what is going on.
I think you may get your wish this week. From what I can see, it's looking like we're getting very close to a retracement. The market's running out of energy, but we have grossly overbought weeks. And as we mentioned earlier on the broadcast, the 10-month moving average is a point where most of the stocks have moved up to. It would have to break out from here with a lot of enthusiasm, which doesn't seem to be there. I think we're due for a retracement. I want to thank you, Mike, for being with us on this broadcast. We look forward, as always, to your return.
Thank you, Mel. We're all looking for a good week in the market.
It looks like we're going to run a little longer today. I don't normally get involved in that long discourse we had earlier about where we're going in the next 3 years. But an amazing number of people that I meet seem totally unaware of the situation the United States is now in. Better now that you understand it and protect yourself than just to be swept away by these problems that are facing this country. We're now going to take a few minutes and look at the complimentary setups for the coming week. The first setup we have for you is AVB. V is in Victor. It's a REIT, Real Estate Investment Trust. And the comment says, this should reverse during the week. There is a better risk-to-reward ratio for the short. That can be translated, you'll probably make more money on a short than if it goes long. Of course, I don't know how the market will open for the coming week. I'm still waiting for my crystal ball to come back from repair. AVB has a tremendous daily range, $4.53, and I think this one's going to produce some good profits for you. Let's take a quick look at the charts for AVB. You notice that it's in a channel. The easiest way to see that is to look at something like a 78 or a 90 or a 120 or a 180, and you can see that this has been bouncing back and forth for quite some time. I'm sure there are a lot of day and swing traders that have made a lot of money on each of these little swings. It's now in position for a short swing. Of course, it could break out and run a little higher, so we've allowed for that. It's right up there now, pushing through the 32-week moving average. They may try to run it back up to the top of that. If so, we're prepared with a long trigger, just so long as you understand that this is a higher risk continuation trade long. A short would be a much safer trade, and that would be a reversal. The second stock that we have for the complementary setups is WHR, Whirlpool. Closely tied to the housing market, it's run through the ceiling. It's also in a position where if the market reverses, I think it's going to go with it. It has an average true daily range of $3.49. That's quite high. It closed Friday at the January highs at potential resistance at the 200-day moving average. It is very overbought on the week, but not on the midterm charts. A breakout is possible if the rally were to continue during the coming week. Let's take a look at the charts of WHR. You'll notice that it's right up there against the 200-day moving average. I mean, it just nailed it. The 240 is at the mean. Of course, it could reverse there, but were it to continue, the stock's currently at $49.88. It could move on up to $54. Take a look down at a 78 or a 90. That's very overbought with an RSI of 95. Your exponential moving 60 on a week is way up at 52.60s. So it just depends where it might go. Take a look at the volume on the day. It's been decreasing, and it was negative Friday. There was buying going into the close, so I expect there'll be a little pop Monday. But if you're patient, I think you're going to get a nice short pretty soon. You can take the long on it. Again, that would be a continuation trade. It's a little rougher. It's a little harder to see. The reversal will be much easier to see. I forget who it was, but somebody sent me some quotes, and I thought they were funny. It gives you kind of a flavor of what kind of society we're living in right now. It begins with great orators of the Democratic Party. One man with courage makes a majority, Andrew Jackson. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself, Franklin D. Roosevelt. Kennedy said, ask not what you can do for your country, or ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. Great quotes. And now from today's politicians. Bill Clinton, it depends on what your definition of sex is. Here's one I have to skip. John Edwards, I believe in the sanctity of marriage. Al Gore, I invented the internet. Joe Biden, I'm going to have to skip that. Very classy. Barack Obama, I have campaigned in all 50 states. Here's another one from Barack Obama. America is no longer what it could be, and so it goes. I guess there were no teleprompters. Nancy Pelosi, you don't need God anymore. You have us. And, of course, the famous quote from Senator Harry Reid, paying taxes is voluntary. But my favorite quote was uttered many years ago by John Wayne. Life's tough. It's even tougher if you're stupid. It was fun putting today's broadcast together. I certainly learned a lot. It's been a wonderful week, and I learned a lot from the people at the course. You're a great group if you're listening. I have great faith in you. You're going to make us all very, very proud. Thank you all for listening. I hope you have an outstanding week in the markets. I have a feeling that this is going to be a very good week. This is your host, Mel Raymond, and I'll see you in the markets.